More than 88,000 people in America are waiting for a kidney transplant. And sadly, about 12 of these patients will die every day because there aren't enough donors. But with the advances in living donor kidney transplant, these numbers are improving. Here with more on all of this and a way to pay tribute to these selfless donors is Dr. Vaughn Whitaker. He's Assistant Professor of Surgery and the Interim Director of Transplant Services. And Ellen Havens, a registered nurse and the Living Donor Transplant Coordinator, both from Upstate Medical University. Thank you for coming in.
Appreciate you very much.
So, Dr. Whitaker, there have been changes now in the ways that we do kidney transplants in terms of donors, living donors, that have made some difference in the numbers of patients waiting. Is that true? Can you tell us about that?
So, yes, that is absolutely true. We have found that living donation and living donors is a significant resource to reduce the number of patients waiting for transplants. There are literally an unlimited number of persons who are available to donate. And this is increasingly being seen as the answer to the ongoing and increasingly exponential gap between the number of patients who are needing transplants and the number of deceased donors.
So something about the way it's being done, though, has made this even more possible. Isn't that correct? Because at one time, it seemed like you needed to have an exact match from a living donor to a transplant recipient.
That is correct. In the past, you had to be a very good match. You had to have essentially the same blood type. Or if you're a donor, you had to be a blood type O. The other thing is, you know, you had to be biologically compatible. In today's world, we can do it. One, you don't have to be in the same geographical area.
Wow.
You know, you could be a part of a national exchange, which has been adopted by our United Network of Organ Sharing, UNOS, and they have a paired exchange program. There are other paired exchanges that occur in the country as well.
Can you explain a little bit when we say a paired exchange? How does that happen? What exactly is happening?
So a paired exchange essentially means that you have a willing living donor, but in some way you're incompatible to that donor. It could be that what we call cross-match, or the compatibility of the bloods when you mix them are not correct. And so that donor may not be able to be your match. And however, you're not the only one in that position, and someone in another state, you know, across in the U.S. may be in the same predicament. So a husband and wife in New York may be not a compatible match, but a father and a daughter in California may also not be a match, but
they may match with that husband and wife.
Exactly. And that's how that works. It may be done contemporaneously, meaning at the same time, or it may be done in a metachronous time fashion, so that it may happen in one day and then it can happen at another day, and then essentially creates this other thing called a chain, where usually that's started by an altruistic donor, someone who comes and say, okay, I'll give a kidney to someone, and then if you have an incompatible pair, the donor for that incompatible pair will then give to another.
So it's kind of like a chain that goes, in this case, across the country, across states, I mean, everywhere. But you need an organization, like you've described, that keeps these records and basically puts these people in touch with each other.
Exactly.
How does that happen across institutions then?
So we have, as I mentioned earlier, there are a number of different organizations. UNOS is not for profit and is... But there is the Alliance for Paired Donation comes out of Toledo, Ohio. There is the National Kidney Registry that is probably has the most successful and the largest registry to date. And they facilitate, essentially, to become a clearinghouse for donors. a national clearinghouse where the donors, all the information, they're in a centralized repository, and using a computer algorithm, they're able to match up people who are otherwise incompatible.
Has that happened locally as well? I know it's happening, as you said, all over. Has it happened at Upstate as well?
We have done our own local exchange, yes, at Upstate. Actually, a year ago, we just celebrated the year anniversary of our local exchange where a husband and wife were incompatible. However, from the community, we had a young altruistic donor who wishes still to remain anonymous. And he was compatible with the wife of our incompatible pair. And the husband, you know, generously offered to give to someone on our list.
Wow.
So in a situation where we never were able to provide transplants for one person, we're able to provide living donor transplantation for two sets of persons.
Amazing. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with kidney transplant surgeon Dr. Vaughn Whitaker and Ellen Havens. She's a registered nurse and the living donor transplant coordinator. And we're talking about breakthroughs that have increased the options for patients awaiting kidney transplants. So has this reduced the numbers then, Ellen, in terms of people on the lists?
Slightly, but unfortunately, there's still just such a large need. So many people still are being added to the waiting list, and the donor numbers in general stay pretty static.
There was one other breakthrough that I remember reading about having to do with the blood incompatibility that also made these donors more compatible. At one time, for example, if you had a problem with blood incompatibility, it was an impossibility. And Dr. Whitaker, how has that changed?
So we're able to actually transplant people across blood groups. So the chain is by utilizing your routine. These transplants are essentially routine transplants. It's just that you're having to shift up who the donor is and the geography. And essentially, it's a logistical shuffling, whereas a incompatible donor that you can transplant, you have to do immunotherapy, essentially. You have to essentially change the immune system.
Currently, or you did?
Oh, we have done it. We have done it at Upstate.
So you do have to change their immune system in order to
allow... You have to modify it. That's probably a better word to use. You have to modify so that they don't reject. When two pairs, a donor and recipient pairs, are incompatible, the idea is that they would reject under normal circumstances if you were to transplant them. And what we do is to essentially exchange their blood by a process called plasmapheresis and by using certain drugs to suppress the production of antibodies so that when you put in an organ that is originally incompatible, there is no evidence of rejection. And we were able to do that last year.
So that's a major breakthrough as well in terms of this whole idea of opening up the opportunities for more transplants, more donors because of this.
Definitely. I mean, patients who would come to us in the past, and this is not just for our centers, and in centers within the United States who are incompatible, would say, you know, that would be the end of the story. You're incompatible.
And you're basically on dialysis until you die. Or
get a deceased donor.
Yeah.
But now we can say, oh, you're incompatible, but these are the options, which is a game changer, essentially.
Amazing. So now, Ellen, you mentioned that hasn't changed the numbers drastically at this point because at the same time as you've opened up the opportunities for more donors, the demand has grown. And Dr. Whitaker, why has the demand grown so much of late?
So, for one thing, you know, the demand has grown because people are actually living
longer.
Longer. In one time, you know, if you had renal disease, end-stage renal disease, that essentially was a kind of a death sentence. And so you had more people dying from their renal disease. Today, with the increased knowledge, the nephrologists are doing, they're so much more better at dialyzing and keeping patients alive.
Isn't it true as well, though, that with the increase in the numbers of diabetic patients in our country that there's more renal disease subsequent to that?
That is a huge contributor to the development of end-stage renal disease.
And therefore the need perhaps for a transplant.
That is exactly true. Hypertension is another big, big factor, especially among African Americans.
Ellen, you have a new way now to manage or to honor these living donors. Tell us about that.
Yes, we recently put up what we call our living donation legacy tree. And what we did was we asked previous living donors if we could have permission from them to put their name on a leaf on the tree. You might have seen these trees in the Children's Hospital or at other medical facilities where it's like a memorial wall. But wonderfully, these are living people, and we can say, there they are. And we put 250 leaves on the tree, and so far I think we have about 90 names there.
Oh, my.
And so yearly we're going to honor our living donors by adding additional names to the tree. And it's just our way of getting more knowledge into the community that these people are out there. Their living donor is being a living donor is possible, and these people are living healthy lives and years after they've donated.
So it's really a way of publicizing and honoring at the same time the fact that you can be successfully a living donor, go on to live a very long and healthy life, and so that it's almost saying be a living donor because this. It really is a wonderful gift, and you're really not harming yourself.
Exactly.
That's wonderful. So how did this idea come to be?
One of our previous administrators saw something like this in another medical facility and said, this looks like a great idea. We can talk about living donation and increase education to the community through this.
And so this is recently.
Yes.
Recently started. That's wonderful. How generally do you see, from your experience, Dr. Whitaker, how do these living donors do? I mean, from your own experience.
They do very, very well. It's variable. Some are like superstar. They want to be back at work in like a week and a half, 2 weeks. I mean, I had a mother who, she homeschools her children. She was back to business in 2 weeks. And, you know, it's variable. Some need a little bit more time to kind of like get into the groove of things. But generally speaking, after about 6 weeks, most of our living donors are ready to really get
rock and
going.
Roll.
Rock and roll.
You had a poem you wanted to read us about living donation.
Yes, this was a poem. This is a poem that I wrote to honor living donors.
That you wrote?
Yes,
oh,
I
my.
Wrote it.
And, wow.
Actually, it got published in our local OPO newsletter. Mm-hmm. And I'd like, if you don't mind, I'd
Please.
Share it. Spring is here again. The sun shines. The temperature is inching up. New life sprouts from the ground. The snow melts. There is green that is reaching up. Soon, there will be evidence of new growth and life all around. So this is a fitting time to recall what we do all year round. With the gift of life that donors pass on, we're able to allow the sun to shine in the life of others who are experiencing their winter of health woes. We're able to allow the warmth of life to re-energize their bodies and spirit. We're able to transplant into their bodies new life and see a rebirth. The snow of ill health and suffering slowly melts away with the warm rays of a new gift. The glow of their faces represent the resplendent green overgrowth that comes naturally. Donors and their families do this all year round, winter, spring, summer and autumn. Because of this selfless gift, husband will get to spend more quality years loving their wives. Sons will see their fathers get back the energies to run their businesses and be the dad they grew up with, sprightly and vigorous. Mothers will give their sons the chance to continue with their dreams of creating foods and tastes that enhances the lives of many in our community. Vacations, hitherto not taken, are enjoyed because a parent in a faraway state decided to pass on the gift of life from their child so that someone they don't know may know a better life. Today, there are over 123,274 persons in the U.S. who are waiting for an organ. In January alone, we did 2,577 transplants. This was due to the generosity of 1,257 donors in the month. We are greatly indebted to all who, in my estimation, are committed to the cause so near and dear to so many whose lives would never be the same.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. My guests have been Dr. Vaughn Whitaker, Assistant Professor of Surgery and the Interim Director of Transplant Services, and Ellen Havens, a registered nurse and living donor transplant coordinator.